Hello, and welcome to Who Keeps Us Safe, a podcast by Asian Americans exploring safety in our communities and beyond. This is a project of Parasol, Pacific Rim Solidarity Network, a Chinese and Taiwanese diaspora activist organization.
Today's podcast will be hosted by Jen, she, her pronouns, and myself, Andy, he, him pronouns. Through this podcast, we will examine the ideas of safety, community, and policing from the perspective of Asian Americans living in Seattle.
In this episode, I had a conversation with a small group of volunteers from the Egg Rolls group, who we covered in episode 8. Go back and listen to that episode if you haven't had a chance to listen yet, as that gives a foundational explanation of what the Egg Rolls are all about.
The Egg Rolls are a volunteer mutual aid group in the Little Saigon neighborhood of Seattle who are discovering what community safety can look like in real time. While providing basic resources to the community around them, they also get a glimpse as to how policing in that community impacts safety in different ways. They don't pretend to have all the answers and try to be mindful and learn from their experiences. Our conversation with them reflects some of the process they have had to go through while trying to create safety in their neighborhood.
Please be advised that this episode includes some content about substance abuse. So maybe Yin, I'll make you go first.
Sure, thanks, Jen. Yin, she, her pronouns. I'm with CID Coalition and Egg Rolls.
All right. Hi, y'all. Nathan here. I use he, him pronouns. I am just with the Egg Rolls.
Hi, here, he, him pronouns, and I wear many hats, but I live in the Little Saigon.
But I think for the recording, he likes to go as no name.
No name.
My name is Jordan. I use he, him pronouns, and I am an Egg Roll.
Jordan, you want to let us know what the Egg Rolls are all about?
Sure. So the Egg Rolls is a collection of volunteers, a mutual aid group that operates on the corner of 12th and Jackson in the parking lot of Chumin Tofu and Veggie Deli. And we primarily do a big Sunday service and a food distro and a supply distro every Sunday from 10:30 to 12:30 that kind of operates through the restaurant. The restaurant donates and cooks food every Sunday morning, but we also do a lot of different things outside of that. Some harm reduction stuff, some distro stuff outside of that, a lot of trainings. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, a lot of excellent people involved, but the big thing that we do is the Sunday service in Little Saigon.
But maybe just speaking to the last year, I think there's been a lot of changes with how we do things. Because, I mean, I'd say this last year was kind of a new phase for us in many ways. In terms of both the neighborhood level, we had the, you know, the Bruce Harrell administration beginning what's called, you know, Operation New Day, bringing in the mobile police precinct and terrorizing a lot of the encampments in the area. So we've seen a lot more police presence on Sundays. Not every Sunday we deal with police officers, but it's at the point where it's probably every two or three Sundays. There's some sort of police activity happening really close to where we do our food distribution. Also, internally, I think we've changed a lot too in this last year, and we've started to change our safety infrastructure more as a group a lot. And we've had a lot of different moments where we've revisited and changed and kind of evolved how we as volunteers show up and try to have more protocols to increase safety for ourselves and for people who are guests who are in our parking lot getting food. I'm curious what other folks think.
Yeah, I've been coming for a little over a year, and I would say that that's, other than just the growth in capacity and the increase in volunteers, I think the biggest change that I've noticed is a more concerted effort to manage safety and to make that a point of for volunteers, for the restaurant, but for guests as well. And I think maybe part of that is in conjunction with the increased police presence, but I would say that's the biggest structural change that I've noticed in my year and change of coming around is a further emphasis on safety.
Nathan said evolved, and I kind of like the way that was used, because we're not professionals, right? Some of us have been doing service for a while, but some of us do other services, and I think we collaborate on input on which is the best way to handle situations, which is the best way to keep, you know, a shield guard from blowing in the wind, right? Things like that. So I really like that, you know, we'll all agree that we're new to this and we're pivoting as things come along, right? And it's really hard to forecast what it's gonna be like in the future for future situations, but I think the group is starting to put safeguards in order for everyone, volunteers and guests, to feel safe while they're there at Sunday service.
So I guess to clarify, we started as picking up trash around the block. And I think since the fence went up, I think we've pivoted a lot more towards safety and de-escalation. One of the Sundays we were there, you know, there was conflict happening while their folks are waiting in line, you know, that so there's a lot of incidents of those where we're just de-escalating what's happening, doing service.
Yeah, that's actually a great follow-up, because I think when we had a conversation with you earlier, the fence may have just gone up or had been there for just like a month. And it was a topic that sparked a lot of different responses, even just within egg rolls. So yeah, that's really interesting. I'm not sure how much you can speak to the specifics, but like hearing your answers, I heard, well, someone said the phrase managing safety, which I actually haven't heard before, but that feels very interesting to me. Like, what does it mean to like manage safety in a certain location with a group of volunteers? And is there any commentary on like how, like what is sparking these points of evolution? Like, does something usually happen and then you debrief, or are folks kind of thinking ahead? Are the police instigating things and now you all have to talk about it? Like, what is I don't know, can you fill in that picture for me a little bit?
Yeah, I feel like there's kind of an inherent risk of doing work outside in a public area. So I think managing safety, or just I hesitate to give people, like someone who's new, for example, like, or someone I'm telling about this, the impression that there's like 100% safety, you know, doing any type of work outside in public, you know? So, you know, there's just inherent risk that I think we just try to do our best to mitigate, but, you know, and I think there's always more to do. I've learned so much from this group that there is so much more that's possible to create more safety. There's also just, yeah, there's inevitably just that chance that something really bad could happen still, you know, when we think about that sometimes, for sure. But one thing that we've done as a group for a while is we have debriefs where we check in at the end of every meal. And we say like, hey, how did this go? What went well? What could change next time? And we keep that note and we put it in our notes. And through that, we've had different instances where things have been especially unsafe. We've had police officers going in and harassing folks within the parking lot. We've had a couple different instances of guests and sometimes get escalated by an interaction with another guest or with a volunteer. We've had instances of actually a volunteer getting in pretty much a fight with a guest one time. So all these instances are things that we can learn from. And when we have that debrief, everyone has their opportunity to talk about what it is that like happened and kind of share their understanding of, you know, what maybe we could do differently to prevent something like that from happening the next time.
Yeah, I think to what Ross said earlier too is that, you know, we're not professionals, so it's all sort of a learning process. You're kind of figuring it out on the fly, and sometimes it takes something going wrong to realize where your blind spots are. And also just regarding the conversation about managing safety, I think it's inherently a little volatile, just being outdoors, being on a busy corner with police, with a lot of people who have, you know, varying different situations in their lives. So I think a lot of managing safety is just sort of preemptively de-escalating by trying to create a hospitable environment. I think that's a big part of the change that I've noticed since I've come around is placing that emphasis on making everybody who comes, volunteers, guests, et cetera, feel comfortable, feel a little bit at home. They're eating a home-cooked meal and just trying to like preempt any volatility by just like creating a very welcoming and kind and communal environment for people who come on Sundays.
I just want to riff off what Jordan said too, where it's like about the creating that environment. I feel like What I like about our debrief activities, we say what works well as opposed and what we could change. And like one thing that was introduced at one point a while ago was like making tea for guests. And we started doing that. And it's like, that was definitely one of those things where we're like, we started doing it. We're like, okay, let's definitely keep doing that. And it's like such a good de-escalator is to like have tea for everybody. It's, yeah, it's just really nice because we never run out. And just the act of like handing somebody a hot cup of tea is like, there's like a little short moment of connection, I think, that kind of can change the dynamic in the situation. Mm-hmm. Doesn't always help, but yeah, some people really enjoy it. And so that's a little piece of safety right there.
Yeah. So I think so that's like the main point, right? We do check-ins in the morning to kind of like ground ourselves into the space and just like remind ourselves it's not just like, it's not charity and it's mutual aid. We're here to practice our values. And really we're here to practice like being safe together, right? And I feel like a lot of this work is learning to debrief and pivot a lot. You know, some of our debrief check-ins or debrief after the service, you know, I learn a lot from that. Like they're like, somebody was asking for a sweep. And I was like, oh my gosh, we've been doing trash pickup for over a year and never asked for a sweep or a broom. You know, they're like asking for stools so that people can actually sit when they're reading, which is like totally necessary. And somebody is like, there was a suggestion from somebody waiting in line to move the line so they don't get pooped on. I was like, by the birds. And I'm like, that's so good. You know? So I feel like I think that's the difference between like a nonprofit industrial complex that usually just like, you know, do their strategic plan and they go forth and there's no room for change. And I feel like with us, there's constant movement for change. We're constantly evolving. We're constantly learning. When there was an incident that happened with other volunteers, you know, I'm thinking about like how to keep them safe and how to debrief with them in that process. And, you know, taking them to get a foot massage or just providing love and care for folks that have been impacted. During our last service, you know, I was also targeted by some person and I feel like that's becomes an invitation for other dudes around me to step up. So that's why I appreciate Egg Girl so much for like, what is it? Egg boys. The dudes that are, you know, trying to figure out how to show up, recognize like the different gender dynamics that happens being out there. Even though like I'm picking up trash and I'm like just like looking down, it seems like a very like mundane or just, you know, just picking up trash, but then, you know, it actually does become very vulnerable. And I think our next phase is that there are parents that are interested to bring their young ones to go do service. And what does that look like for us to be able to hold space for folks that want to show up and do mutual aid service? And what does safety look like to be able to provide with such a broad range of age folks? Yeah, I think that's like the next chapter.
In general, can you describe what police presence is like?
Where to begin? I think that in the past, there was a period of time, I think, after what Nathan referenced earlier, the designation of Little Saigon and our corner specifically as a crime hotspot, the police were pretty active. The mobile precinct was kitty corner from where we serve meals. And it was not uncommon at the time for police to come into the parking lot, sometimes into the restaurant, sometimes actively escalating situations, conflicts that we were in the process of resolving. Sometimes just, I think, showing up while people are lined up waiting for food. It's a very exposed corner and people often have things with them that they may or may not be selling. And police kind of hone in on secondary sales of retail items. And when people are waiting for food on a very open corner, it's really easy to signal people and to pick them out. I think there's been somewhat of a decrease in police presence over the past 6 months since that initial designation, which has been nice. And most of the police interactions in the neighborhood are pretty concentrated on the two bus stops that sort of flank the parking lot. But I think that a big thing that police do to escalate already tense situations in our in Little Saigon is just to be visible. There's a truck that often pulls up onto the bus stop directly near next to the parking lot during meal services. And I think it does just the presence of a sort of menacing figure deters a lot of people, I think, from sometimes you'll see people leave the line for service when it shows up. Sometimes you'll see people avoid the corner after the police roll up onto the parking lot, blocking the pathway. So I think lately, at least, the escalation by the presence of the police has been not necessarily direct, but just by presenting a presence. Although in the last couple of weeks, we have had a couple instances where people have been pretty actively targeted, which is part of the incident we had a few Sundays ago, was just a police officer who was signaling out a person who had left our parking lot after food service for items that may or may not have belonged to them initially.
And I think you were kind of there next, right, after that?
Sure. So the incident in question, I guess. So there was a lot of police presence. Usually there's two entrances for service. One is entering, one is exiting. So a lot of our security team are usually there and kind of moving around, floating. So I went to check on a corner because there was two police presence targeting somebody. And I just went over there to hear what was happening. And I could hear that, like, they were threatening somebody of arrest. And yeah, so it was kind of intense. So I was trying to figure out, okay, do I record? What, like, I have all this stuff on my hands because I'm picking up trash. And so from the bus stop, somebody came over twice. Different people came over to the police area when the arrest was trying to happen. Bus stop folks came by asking them if they have Narcan.
Just a note, Narcan, also known as Naxalone, is an opioid antagonist medication that is used to reverse an opioid overdose.
And so they basically disrupted what was happening. So by the second time, the police finally left that corner and went to address what was happening at the bus stop. I could hear the police saying that they don't have Narcan. And so that's when I went back inside and I grabbed Nathan. And I don't even think you were doing security. I think you were just doing supplies.
Yeah, I was just getting t-shirts and stuff.
And I was just asking Nathan, like, do you have Narcan? And he did.
Yeah. So yeah, no, we went over to this bus stop and the police were there with this other guy. Steve was also there, who was a bystander who had actually come by to get some food a little bit earlier. And yeah, this guy was just on the ground. As actually my first time ever seeing someone overdosing in front of me. And so one of the first times at least. Pretty much completely limp and the police repeated that they don't carry Narcan. They specifically said, we don't carry that. We don't have Narcan. And so I had some intramuscular Narcan that I brought out from the glove compartment in my car. And I got there and I was just focused on getting a dose ready, mostly also because police were kind of around his shoulders and head and torso, and his feet were towards me. They were kind of like trying to almost question this guy a little bit, even though he was passed out. And so it wasn't really a situation where it felt like I could safely even like try to like get a pulse from his neck or anything, unfortunately, and see if he's breathing. So at that moment, I just felt like the best thing I could do from this position I was in was like, okay, I'm just gonna get Narcan ready. While I was doing that, Steve, who was taking a really active role in the situation too, said like, okay, I've got nasal Narcan and I'm going to administer this to him. And the police were like, okay, sure, whatever. And he ends up, you know, pretty much propping this guy's head up on his lap. And I see him at least give one dose to this unconscious man. And at that point, I have my dose ready of intramuscular. I definitely felt like it was still important to get that ready. My understanding is that sometimes nasal doesn't even actually work for certain folks and certain situations. Oftentimes, actually, multiple doses are necessary to reverse an opioid overdose, especially nowadays, given how strong fentanyl is. So I definitely felt really strongly that it was important to be ready to see if this worked or not. So in that process of kind of approaching this guy with the needle, police officer saw me and was like, what is that? Like, what are you doing? And I said, I am approaching, I have this Narcan. And he says, that's not Narcan. That is Narcan does not come in that form. Narcan is just nasal. And it was really confusing for me because I thought I actually first only knew about it as injectable. And so there we kind of enter this strange little standoff situation. At the same time, the other cop, this lady, has this guy's like hand, like head kind of like at her feet, and she's saying like, "Wake up, this is the Seattle police. Wake up." Were you there for that? It was very strange, because I just don't think that's how you try to get somebody to wake up. But that's like how they were treating him. Like treating him was just like yelling at him to like try to get him to wake up, as if he's like pretending or something, even though he's like completely gray in the face and completely limp. I think she maybe thought he was going to start to wake up like slowly. So that was definitely a bit of a standoff. And what I had to do eventually was I kind of got my knees again, and I approached him after pausing. And the police officer repeated that again. He said, "Do not come any closer to him." And I don't remember what he said to me at this point, if he threatened to arrest me or not. I can't remember, because it was very intense. And I was,
he threatened to arrest you.
Okay. The law says he threatened to arrest me. I don't know. I just remember saying that I can administer Narcan. And I remember just looking at his leg and looking at the spot that I was going to like put it into. But luckily, while we're having this standoff with each other, with this guy kind of yelling at me and me just being like, I can be here, kind of trying to de-escalate him, I guess, or just be kind of hold my ground, the EMTs arrived. And as the EMTs arrived, also this guy who was having an overdose started to wake up. And then he woke up, because it happens very quickly, actually. You know, he kind of bolted up and started kind of swinging around a little bit, because he was pretty confused and about what was going on around him. So luckily, Steve, you know, who gave him the Narcan, allegedly gave him two doses. So, and it kicked in probably in about 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes. It was pretty quick. So we didn't have to use the intramuscular Narcan after all. But, you know, it was a sobering moment, I think, for me and for the group, because we realized how inept the police are.
Yeah.
And also that they even would potentially arrest or harm, do something to stop us from even administering the intramuscular Narcan. So, yeah, it's a very concerning moment.
So I sent to go help Nathan, because I had sent Nathan and really should not send anybody alone. So I went and grabbed him.
I agree to it.
He graciously, I didn't even know what situation he was stepping into, but yeah. He went.
So when I got there, it just felt really tense. Nathan says, you know, the Narcan kicked in about 90 seconds to 2 minutes was, but at the time when you're at a high stress level, it's like, oh, every second counts, like it's ticking. Dude's not waking up, right? And I'm looking at Nathan. Nathan's looking at me. We're looking at the cop who's trying to stop Nathan. It's like, is someone getting arrested today? What's going to go on, right? I think it's flabbergasting to know that SPD doesn't carry Narcan, right? When there is an epidemic in our city. And it's even more frustrating that when someone says, hey, I have Narcan, I want to inject this person who is obviously overdosing with Narcan, the police is like, no, you can't. If you do that, I will arrest you. And so the series is who keeps us safe, right? In that instance, it wasn't the police keeping anybody safe. They were in fact escalating the situation.
Yeah, and preventing us from even, you know, administering basic aid too, pretty much, you know, just making that really difficult. Yeah, yeah, completely opposite. I've been coming to TuneIn for almost 3 years consistently. There's never been a situation where I've been like, I'm not even just saying this because I like dislike cops, but it's like if there was a situation that where the cops made it more safe, and I'd be honest about it, you know, but there hasn't been a situation where they showed up and I'd be like, yes, thank you for being here. Like, we needed you to show up. That hasn't happened, you know? Like,
no, there's been plenty of situations in which the police have escalated conflicts in the parking lot or created conflicts in the parking lot. But I feel like this was pretty jarring, even for all of us who are pretty well established in how we view the police in our neighborhoods and in our cities and in this country. But to see it in just absolute direct opposition to community safety was even for us, I think, pretty shocking. And it is, it's my understanding too. And I talked to a friend of Egg Rolls who is a former EMT, that police are meant to be carrying Narcan. So it's doubly baffling in that context. But also I just cannot wrap my brain around what they thought Nathan was doing. Right? Like, I just can't understand. It's very difficult for me to reconcile the situation in that context, because what are you doing but exercising your authority unnecessarily by telling a community member to not intervene in a life or death situation? And what do you think that person's intentions are? To further harm? To, you know, like, just the whole thing has been burrowed in my brain for a month at this point. And I'm sure that's true of a lot of Egg Rolls who are actively involved and who were actively involved in the situation, Nathan and Rodney in particular. But it's all very, I don't have a strong enough word for it, discouraging, but to the nth power. It's just pretty maddening.
Well, even as I'm listening to it, it's preconceived understandings of cops aside for a second. Like, if there's some kind of task force supposedly about safety, it sounds like pretty consistently on that corner, seeing you all on Sundays. Like, it's weird that, unfortunately, not surprising, but it is in concept weird to have two consistent presences there, supposedly about community and safety and maybe even making that block a better place, not be on the same team, not trusting each other. Like, it's just, I feel like there's a lot there. It's making me curious, like, part of the trainings or maybe conversations that you'll have about your own group safety, like, has there been any training on how to be safe from the police?
We've had one police liaison training that we did with a friend of ours, and I think there's the interest in doing that more, for sure. Generally, I know there's a sense of, like, we're still trying to figure out how to have police liaison, given the fact that we kind of do have like more of a long-standing relationship with whoever's around there. You know, there's a bit of a balance, given the fact that it's not like we just show up to a situation and we, like, have to deal with some random cop. Like, I definitely recognize the cops at this point who show up now. So yeah, I think we're still figuring that out in terms of that. But the trainings that we have taken that keeps us safe are focused around the de-escalation skills, for sure. The first de-escalation training we did, I think, kind of became part of, like, our DNA, I think, as a group in a way, which is a training we did with CALM. So yeah, Community Action, CALM, Community Action for Liberation Medics, gave us our first de-escalation training. And I feel like that gave us a really good, because it talked about taking care of your, like, understanding your own place in a situation and kind of figuring out to, like, make sure you don't escalate yourself, make sure you aren't escalated before you get into a situation. And just understanding, like, the limitations of de-escalation too was really important for us, I think, as a group. Something that came out of that, I recall, is, and this is something I think we still contend with a lot, is just, what's our boundary of where we provide community care? And generally, we kind of consider that, I think, the fenced area that we operate in. But we do extend outside of that too. Like, we have folks waiting in line outside of that. So it gets a little blurry, but just generally, we have to, part of the safety, I feel like, for us, is knowing limitations of the group. And not jumping into every single situation completely off the cuff, you know. But at the same time, we did kind of do that in this situation. So
I was like, that weekend, you guys also addressed someone being maced.
There
so
are contradictions.
I feel like we did a lot of de-escalation.
Well, because I feel like that does kind of count as that, as the when we're at our best, or not our best, but at our most consistent, which is, this person did enter our space. And this person, actually, on that day, we were providing, yeah, Jordan was helping provide care for someone who got maced by a security guard and was going through a lot of pain. And this person entered our space. And it's like, while we are here, we're going to, like, try to address your needs as best as we can. And we did, you know, we put a lot of, yeah, we're not going to talk about that, actually.
I think the person came in and the back of their neck underneath their hair was completely red. They were maced. We don't carry any milk because Egg Rolls is completely vegan. So I'm trying to MacGyver this. It's, oh, you know what? Coconut milk. There's the oil to this place, whatever the enzymes that are there. And We that worked for a little bit, but then the pain came back. So we remember during the uprising that Mutual Aid was giving away the magnesium sprays. So we ran home and we got that, and that helped out. That helped a lot, I think.
And all these things were kind of happening simultaneously, which I feel gives maybe the wrong impression of what a typical Sunday is like, because it's generally, I mean, again, it goes back to just the volatility of doing community work outdoors. There are situations you can't predict. And after we sort of worked on the Mace situation, said to me, you know, there's no rule book for how to proceed. There are guidelines and there are things, standards you can set for yourself and a level of preparedness you can have as a group, but it's just volatile work by nature. So there are unpredictable situations and you kind of have to, that's how you learn. You learn by experiencing them sometimes and being better prepared for that situation, however unlikely it might be in the future. So that, yeah, that was a good hour of trying to alleviate a guest's pain. Milk of magnesia was clutch, and now we have it. And I think that's kind of just mutual aid, is you learn, and it's volunteer work. You figure it out. You help disseminate information with other like-minded people, and you try to be better prepared for what might happen in the future.
Again, circling to the training, I feel like the calm training, while we can't guarantee safety, I think we can be more aware of the level of like what zone each of us is in and can be in. And so, you know, in this training, we learned about like the green, yellow, orange, red zone, and kind of describe that. And we kind of learned that like red zone is like someone getting like stabbed or shot. And it's like, that is, we kind of agreed pretty quickly, like we actually can't fix that. That's not why we come together. We don't try to like, we don't come together to prevent stab wounds, treat stab wounds. We know we come together to, you know, pretty much kind of help people in the more like the yellow zone, people who are like are hungry, and try to get them to the green zone, which is like get fed. But I think by learning de-escalation, by learning providing medical supplies, we're learning how to deal with people who are in kind of this orange and yellow zone and bring them into a better place somewhat if we can provide that. And for ourselves too. So I think as a group, one of the norms we've established also is like, yeah, this like buddy system where we make sure that we have someone with us. And so, you know, Yin was great in that, you know, she identified that I wasn't with the buddy and sent me a buddy, you know, to make sure that if I'm in a certain zone, my comrade, my peer has my back. So I feel like that, yeah, the calm training, which is, you know, gives us a sense of just escalation scale, both for ourselves individually and for just people in general. I feel like that's something we really took to heart, where we try to like make sure we don't get escalated as a group. So we like, we don't take on too much individually. And we also try to like do what we can for folks who we encounter. And at the same time, we know our limits. We try to stay aware of our limits. At the same time, something that's been really amazing is we have so many volunteers that are so interested and drawn to like the energy of our group and what we do and the cause of it and the politics of it. And so because there were so many people who showed up the day that we were all there, we were able to step away and continue to feed folks too while that was happening. It was really difficult. And it really pushed us, but I think it was still like, okay, you know, even though it wasn't perfect and messy, part of that I think is our size and our culture.
I do want to maybe end on what recovery looks like for you after something like that happens. What does it mean for you to care for each other? What does the aftermath look like for you currently? I kind of want to talk about that aspect of when things like this happen to you.
I want to cite my sources. I feel like the only reason I was able to show up to be with the cops by myself is because of the Black organizers, Black movements, BLM and other folks. And for me to be at Standing Rock with the Indigenous folks, and when I was about to get arrested, for other Asian folks to lock arms with me. So I feel like the only way to really have these experiences to fight against, to stand against the state who's causing harm, is following the leadership of other folks. And, you know, I was trained by the Black and Indigenous community, and therefore I'm grateful. So without their training, I don't feel like I would have had that spaciousness or capacity to jump into that space and see what's happening. I feel like folks can speak for themselves of like where they come from in order to have that root, to be grounded in that space, to be like, no, I am not leaving and you shouldn't be here. The police, the state, you are causing harm. I am protective of this space. I think about the incident of when some of the other volunteers, especially female volunteers, are being targeted by certain guests. I think about the recovery for them, that I felt very protective, even though I wasn't there. For me, the recovery was for me to offer holding space and care for them, taking them out and doing the foot massage and just, you know, showering them with love and appreciation. So that's how I feel of my capacity to be able to provide support. And I feel like for this incident particularly, we were able to discuss in a bigger meeting, in our weekly meeting, to debrief that. And I appreciate all the folks for debriefing that together. And I feel like that was really important to just like learn and process together. And then now we're processing with the podcast. But I feel like that's important in learning, right? Like I feel like if we're just constantly keep going, I think capitalism teaches us to just keep going. Mm-hmm. Like we're not pausing, we're not stopping. The lineage of keep on consuming. I don't know. But capitalism, that's what's in vain. But here we are like pausing and like taking a moment and connecting with our heart and our humanity to be like, something happens. We need to check in. We need to figure out if we're okay.
Yeah. I feel like you do that for our group in a really good way too. I feel like you're very good at acknowledging like there's a lot of we need to pause. I mean, to like acknowledge this. This is something we need to pay attention to. I think the formation of Egg Boys, like masculinity circle that we've formed within our group, is also comes from some of those conversations. And I remember just like being on some threads with you and like hearing your input. I was like, yeah, we gotta like, let's do this. And I think that played a really big role. Chloe Huber in our group also has done so much to build our approach to safety. And I know API Chaya as well. A lot of folks in our group have different experiences with API Chaya and they've helped us with some workshops pretty early on. So yeah, API Chaya has been like a huge part of how we do things. I think we owe a lot to them. I think another person in our group who I think does a really good job with that, Johnny Fikru, who's actually the longest consistently volunteering member of our group. And he's also does a really good job of when we have our weekly meetings, if there's been something that happened that week that he just can tell or has like figured out, there's like some emotional resonance of it that like is just felt. He's built into our culture now to like just make space for that and say like just create a circle and say like, let's just talk about this. Let's just talk about this thing that happened. A lot of people are feeling this, so let's talk about it. I think that's been really healthy for us as a group to like process stuff that's difficult, sometimes traumatic even together.
I was thinking about Johnny too. I think ditto on Johnny and Yin. I think everybody, and going back to something Nathan said about the strength of our culture, and part of this, I want to shout out Tanya from the restaurant as well. I think that she's sort of the foundation on which everything happens. And she is somebody who just embodies that sense of community and hospitality. And you really genuinely around her feel like you're in your living room or at your mom and dad's. It's just like a very, it feels like home. And I think that impresses upon a lot of the volunteers who are instrumental in making things happen on Sunday. And I think we really try to center community and not a community of volunteers or a community of guests, just a community writ large. And I come to activism or organizing or whatever you want to call it through music and through punk rock. And it's generally an expression of discontent or despondency, if not outright anger at the way things are. And I think in the year and change that I've been around these people, it's really taught me to be hopeful and mindful of my neighbors and my friends and the people that I not just communicate with regularly, not even just see Sunday, but just in general. And I think that it's really apparent on a Sunday in the parking lot in Little Saigon, because everybody is constantly asking everybody if they're doing okay, if they're all right, if they need anything, passing out water to each other. There's just a lot of checking in that I think really reinforces the point of being there in the first place, which is to look out for people and for each other where no one else is.
The Egg Rolls approach to community safety reminds us that this is an issue that can't be solved alone, nor does it happen overnight. They consistently show up every Sunday on one block, forming trust among themselves and with the neighborhood. And when emergencies arise, they use a problem-solving approach with care in mind. In contrast, the police presence on that same block has not aided in their efforts for safety, but rather exacerbated it. This is just another example of how community members are best positioned to create safety if given the resources and opportunity.
We'd like to thank the members of the Egg Rolls for chatting with us about how their organization works to create safety in Little Saigon. Check out the description for this episode to see more information about the Egg Rolls and links on how you can get involved, as well as some op-eds that the Egg Rolls have published that give more detailed information on their work and its political context. We also encourage you to go back and listen to our very first episode to reflect more on community safety and consider how you might get involved in your own neighborhood.
The podcast hosts, Alex, Andy, and Jen, are a small team of local community organizers who also produce and edit the episodes of Who Keeps Us Safe. We organize and record our podcast on the unceded ancestral lands of the Coast Salish peoples, specifically the Duwamish tribe. Special thanks to our social media volunteers, Chloe and McKenna, and to all the artists who have contributed to the episode artwork and this podcast. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Who Keeps Us Safe.